This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Dr. Bill Smith, our history doctor. Today, well, you probably are aware of Occupy Wall Street, a series of protests around the country that has caught the attention of the nation. In Northwest Arkansas, there has been Occupy Northwest Arkansas. There's been Occupy Little Rock. We have seen these Occupy fill-in-the-blank all over the country, and many people are making comparisons to the 1960s. Dr. Bill Smith, is that accurate?
Yes and no. The answer that I'm sure you were expecting.
Yes, it is.
You know, let's make some quick and clear distinctions. The Occupy Wall Street movement seems to be economically focused in its politics. It's a mistake to confuse their work with the anti-war and civil rights events of the 1960s. The protests at the 1968 Chicago Democratic Convention, for example, had some economic base, but that wasn't its core. Of course, the huge race riots that burned large swaths of American cities, again, bad examples to try to say this movement is like those movements of the 60s.
All right, so we have that defined. What's the comparison?
Well, I think we have a little bit of a comparison. In one of the great movements of the 60s was the SDS. You've probably heard the letters, Students for Democratic Society. It was born from the Port Huron movement. 1962, meeting of some individuals to decide a manifesto of sorts of how they wish to proceed in changing America's politics. Now, SDS is going to peak in the late 60s, and in large part, it was a protest movement known for sit-ins, or more accurately, teach-ins, during 65, 66, and 67. They focused mostly on college campus events. 67, 68, they began to protest against some corporate entities associated with what was becoming known as the military-industrial complex and the Vietnam War. Of course, there was the splinter group that was far more violent that broke off from SDS that became known as Weathermen. Now, aside from the Cold War aspects, which really the Port Huron statement was more focused on, it shared some common points. But still, that was not the economic focus that you see in today's protest. Better examples of this might be the Hoovervilles of the 30s, or maybe the Hobos before that, or even back into the latter part of the 1800s and some of the labor movements in there.
The Occupy movement, in early stages, what's next?
Well, remember, I mentioned 1962 was the Port Huron Statement. It's not till 65 that you see some larger protests, and 68 and 69 for the more violent and large-scale events. I think your question now is flashover. The movement began in the early 60s and featured small occupations of educational facilities, you know, not unlike what's happening now, with a focus on economically oriented facilities like Wall Street. But it was the free speech movement in Berkeley that saw one of the first violent clashes. A couple thousand folks held a sit down around a block to prevent the arrest of one of their colleagues, and that shut the town down for a day. It escalates from there. I think this is a point that needs to be clearly made. While Occupy Wall Street is getting a lot of attention, it is nothing in the scale to what was going on during the late 60s. What started off as tens of thousands involved would eventually peak out in 1968 with a national student strike day in which roughly a million were reported to have not gone to class that day, shutting down several schools and taking over the campus of Columbia University during that time. I mean, when I say take over the campus, I mean not a building, not the administrative building, the campus.
So Occupy right now can be classified as a relatively small movement compared to those.
Well, and again, really quiet and frankly, in spite of what you may have seen on TV, well behaved. What many remember is the days of rage when you think back to student movements in the late 60s, the Weathermen, the race riots. So to put it in context, what you're seeing now, you know, with the exception of that violent breakoff group from SDS, is not a really good analogy, nor are some of the other events like Haymarket riot and events during the 30s, although you get a little bit of a crossover there. One of the first things that Weathermen set off a bomb on was the statue to the police that had been killed during the Haymarket riot.
Haymarket in the latter quarter of the 19th century. How do these recent events stand up to that?
Well, Haymarket Square was the site of one of the largest early labor protests, and it erupted into a violent event when an anarchist put a bomb into the crowd, and this started the police firing, and 8 were killed. No one really knew who shot who or even who threw the bomb. It was the outgrowth of a May 1st, 1886 event nationwide, which set the tone, so you could say there's some analogy there. And this was a labor movement drawing attention to the growing need for organized labor. In May the 3rd, there had been an organizing event near the McCormick plant, which was outside of Chicago. On May the 4th, a rally at Haymarket Square in Chicago. That is the heart of the event. Started off as your usual kind of protest, speeches. The mayor reportedly had come out to look to see what was going on. Nobody thought much of it until the bomb went off. You know, the event literally gives us the phrase, bomb-throwing anarchist, if you've heard that tossed about before. Many will also say this is the original police riot of Chicago, you know, as in 86, in 68, 1968, you had the great demonstration outside the Democratic National Convention in which the police went off and you had the famous phrase of the whole world is watching as the protesters were clubbed and hauled away. So Haymarket really is not a settled event. It tarnishes the labor movement for some time after 1886 and labels them as radical and tars them with the anarchist brush. At the same time, it inspired International May Day and gave some focus and movement to that political side of the aisle. To this day, though, we really don't know how it started. We just know the tragedy that resulted.
It was based in labor. Jobs obviously relate to labor. Are there any specific prior events to needing work?
Well, economic disruption has led to many protest events during our history, but the widest spread and longest lasting were the encampments of homeless and jobless that started in 1929 and in some areas lasted until the start of the Second World War that were a result of the upheaval we know as the Great Depression. They grew in almost every major city, and they became the center of some protest, but they mostly were about survival. It is where people lived in tents and shanties and tried to get by where they had lost a house, lost a job, lost the ability to take care of themselves. These areas were periodically cleared out by civic leaders or attempted to be cleared out by civic leaders, and they gained the generic label of Hoovervilles, named for the president at the time, of course, Herbert Hoover.
And many of these had a strong presence of veterans, people who had fought in the First World War.
They did. And one of the most notable of those was the Bonus Army. Mm-hmm. It's one of the great confrontations of this period. The Bonus Army was a protest of tens of thousands of World War I veterans. During the flush money times of the early 20s, Congress had voted a pension of sorts, a bonus to veterans of the First World War, not unlike the $1 billion Congress had voted a pension to the veterans of the Grand Old Army, the Union War veterans, in the 1880s when things were flush, then had a hard time paying that off.
There is a cycle here, isn't there?
It does.
When times are great, we'll promise you money.
We love to spend money, and then when times get tough.
Sorry.
We absolutely did. Now, that said on this one, what the bonus had promised was a payoff in 1945. Mm. It is 1932. And these veterans have marched on Washington to protest and to raise their voice and say, you know what, Congress, we'd like our bonus right now.
Times are tough.
And this is what the vote was about and the protest was about. And Congress rejected, overwhelmingly rejected, the Bonus Army bill to change the date of the payout. Now what's going to happen? In Anacostia Flats outside of Washington, D.C., was one of the larger Hoovervilles to begin with, and now it is flush with over 10,000 veterans. Kind of a scary thought if you're the federal government that right on the edge of town are former military who could perhaps organize themselves again and this time not come in protest, but perhaps do more damage.
Oh, and by the way, who did give years and blood and sweat to defend the country.
Exactly. And are without job, without a place to go, and somewhat desperate. So you've got men who are in a position that could be a threat to you, or at least this is the way they become perceived. Mm-hmm. Herbert Hoover will call on the veterans to disperse. And when by that date they did not disperse, the Attorney General of the United States ordered the forcible removal of the Bonus Army and the routing out of the Hoovervilles and Anacostia Flats. This is the first re-emergence on the national scene of the famous Army family of the MacArthurs.
Mm-hmm.
Douglas MacArthur will command the infantry sent in to rout the protesters, and he will be supported by a tank brigade led by none other than Major George Patton. There were reports of the use of gas on the veterans, and I don't mean gasoline, although that did come into play later when they burned the camp,
mm-hmm.
but we're talking about chemical warfare, essentially, lobbing in gas grenades. The infantry routed the Bonus Army with fixed bayonet charges. You can sort of get a sense of what this was. Could you imagine now, as we often like to talk about, in a 24/7 cycle?
Oh, my gosh. The current United States military in battle with veterans of that same military?
Indeed.
It is not one of the prouder moments in the country's history.
Many were injured, a few were killed, and the Army eventually set fire to the camp so that there would be no return to the Anacostia Flats, Hoovervilles.
I want to go back to a term you said earlier when we were first talking, and you mentioned Hoovervilles and some others. You mentioned hobos.
Right. And,
hobos.
And most folks are acquainted with the idea of the hobo, the young man.
The cartoon character.
Cartoon character.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in reality, it's a young man who is without means or job or rooted.
Mm-hmm.
So they would take to the rails looking for opportunity, looking for something to do, and travel the country. Hobos had been around, and that term really is vague in its origin. It's going to appear after the start of the 1900s. But hobos have been around since there have been railroads. Obviously, when times got tough in the Great Depression, hobo and hobo culture explodes and becomes a major part of this. If you had lost your way and perhaps had a family and couldn't move from your area, you might have deposited yourself and your family in the Hooverville. But if you heard rumor that, hey, a few hundred miles down the railroad track there might be jobs, what you would do instead is you would hobo, jump the train, and hope for the best in some other part of the country.
All right. Well, until someone calls you a bomb-throwing anarchist,
we're history.